Welcome back to the Unboxed broadcast. Today, Dr. Davis and I spend time in conversation with James Sweat. He's a former high-level banking executive and now owner of Goosehead Insurance Agency. We'll talk about his life and leadership philosophy, and in honor of Black History Month, we'll also learn more about his family and pick his brain about leadership development from an African-American perspective. We're ready to dive in. We're excited you're here. So stick around as we help you unbox the power and potential of your leadership.
I'm Dr. Robert Davis, family life educator and leadership coach. This is my co-host, R.P. Soriano. Soriano attended John Hopkins Carey Business School, worked in the financial industry, and was an international consultant before partnering with me to launch Unbox to Lead. Me? Well, I worked for over 20 years as a senior pastor and a community organizer. Then I retired and started a leader's peer support community called Unbox to Lead. Soriano and I have been friends since the early 90s, and with our varied experiences and expertise, we help leaders reach the next level in their leadership. So join us for the next few moments as we unbox the power and the potential of your relationships, your leadership, and your life.
You know, that music always gets me going, man. So,
man, me too.
All right, welcome back, one and all, wherever you may be in the world. I'm R.P. Soriano, and with me once again is Dr. Robert Davis. He's a family and workplace relationship expert and author of Seasoned with Grace, God's Recipe for Healthy Family Communication, and also the author of The 12 Steps to Becoming an Unboxed Leader. How are you this week, my friend?
I'm actually feeling good. I'm encouraged with the Black History Month upon us, and just excited to dive into today's conversation with a good friend of mine, James Sweat.
I'm excited, too, for all the same reasons that you just mentioned. I want to remind everyone to please like, share, and subscribe to the broadcast. Also, be sure to follow all of our social pages. You can visit our blog as well at www.unboxtolead.com. to access past episodes of our broadcasts, webinars, and you can also sign up for our newsletter so you never miss out on any of the latest content or specials that we offer for our services. As I mentioned in the introduction, and as Dr. Davis has mentioned, we are celebrating Black History Month. We're honoring the legacy of what African Americans have meant to America, and also celebrating the leaders, the activists, innovators, and voices that continue the fight to make America a beacon of freedom and equality for all. So in the spirit of equality and inclusion, I want to remind some of you out there and introduce for the first time to others the Unboxed to Lead BIPOC Executive Director Leaders Peer Support Community Scholarship. Man, that was a mouthful. And I will not say it again. So thanks to our partners and sponsors, we have 20 scholarships available for BIPOC executive directors of nonprofits and or community organizations. The first cohort, we're excited to say, begins Tuesday, March 28th of this year. And we're taking applications now. We've been getting a lot of great quality applications. So we're excited for the people who have already applied. There are only 20 spots available, however, for this cohort. So be sure to apply. You can visit our scholarship page at www.unboxtolead.com/scholarship. This program is designed to address the unique challenges that BIPOC leaders and their organizations face. One goal is to provide equity through learning, coaching, support, growth, and to give BIPOC leaders access to resources that they otherwise might not be able to financially access. And that's why the scholarship covers the full cost of the program. So if you're a BIPOC leader of a nonprofit community organization, or you know someone who is, be sure to visit and share the website, www.unboxtolead.com/scholarship. I'll say it again, www.unboxtolead.com/scholarship. Robert, I want to give you a chance to share a little bit about why this initiative is so important to you and what makes the Unboxed to Lead Leaders Peer Support Community different from other nonprofit leader programs.
You know, it really goes to the heart of what I've done my whole life and what I'm currently doing relative to community. As you know, Unboxed is the project coordinator for the Denver Task Force to Reimagine Policing and Public Safety. We have a distinct recognition as the largest community-led task force addressing public safety in the entire nation. And as a result of that, I've had an opportunity to work with over 40-plus community organizations and service providers. And what I discovered during doing this work is that many of our nonprofit leaders, our executive directors, are burnt out. They are stressed. They are really trying to keep their heads above water. There's a high level of turnover, a high difficulty with volunteer retention. Financing and funding is a challenge for many of them. So there's just a myriad. And then you put that on top of having to deal with home and work-life balance, as well as trying to stay healthy, reach life goals. All that stuff is just really pouring on some of our most important people, which are those who provide such needed services to the community. And so when I saw that, I began to ask the question, what can I do to support these leaders? And as you know, I began doing some executive coaching, one-to-one executive coaching. And then it was given to me by one of our previous guests, Chanel Reed, where she said, hey, listen, have you ever thought about doing a support group? And so I started the support group with her encouragement. And I realized that leaders need more than just a coach. They really need an entire community that they can come together and can work together in a mastermind type setting, in an emotional support type setting, reaching their own professional and personal life goals, thinking through solutions within their organizations and all of those things. And it became, as I was doing the pilot program with a group of executive directors here in Denver, it became evident to me, and it kind of hit me like a ton of bricks, that what I needed when I was a pastor, one of the biggest challenges that I faced was not really having a support group to be there with me. So I wanted to make sure that we created a host of services that really helped leaders. And that's what makes us different, is because we look at leadership from a very comprehensive perspective. Not only do we talk about the executive skills that leaders need, you know, how to do fundraising and things like that, which are very important, but we also talk about the leader as the person, as a family person, the leader in relationships. We help leaders to understand the intersection between how they function within their family relationships with how they manage their team, how they manage anxiety. Our goal is to help leaders to become calm, less anxious leaders who create healthy workplace cultures. But most of all, we've created a forum whereby leaders can support one another, because no one understands what a leader is dealing with like another high-level leader. Mm-hmm. No one understands what it is like to be an executive director of a nonprofit like an executive director of a nonprofit. And so by putting these minds in the room together, they can really support and help each other to grow in every area of their leadership and of their development. I am just excited and encouraged to be able to offer this and to be able to offer it to BIPOC leaders through our scholarship, through the generosity of our foundations and other donors.
Yeah. And look, we've had conversations with foundations and with people who approve grants, and they've said that this is the exact thing that is needed for nonprofit leaders. So yeah, very well said there. And as you mentioned, it's been through the generosity of foundations and corporate partners who have allowed us to be able to provide these scholarships and made it possible. So if you are an organization or a foundation and you want to help to so that we can expand and offer more seats in this program, you want to talk to us about that, we'd love to have a conversation with you. You can shoot us an email at scholarship@unboxtolead.com. That's scholarship@unboxtolead.com. Okay, let's get into our broadcast for today. We're happy to have with us on the broadcast today, Mr. James Sweat. And Robert, as you said, you and James go way back. So why don't you introduce him and go ahead and to our audience and go ahead and get us up to 30,000 feet.
Man, yes, I am so impressed with this gentleman. I pastored the Berean Seventh-day Adventist Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, back in 2008. This was just a leader with distinction. At the time that I met him, he was an executive with one of our major national banks. You know, when we would have board and business meetings, it was just obvious. You know, when some people enter the room, it just becomes kind of obvious who the leaders are. But he'll talk about his leadership development as we interview him. But I want to say one thing about him that I admire more than anything else as I introduce him. He is the father of four beautiful daughters, and each of them are just unbelievable and fantastic. And I've told him before, and I want to say it on this show, I believe that he should write a book or at least teach a masterclass on how a father raises daughters. I've really been impressed with his leadership and his interaction with his daughters. I think that that's the key part as we talk about Black history, is that he's a living demonstration of how a Black man raises strong, intelligent, wonderful Black daughters in this society, in this generation. So it's my honor to bring to the show my friend James Sweat. James, how you doing today?
Doing great. Doing great. Thanks for that kind introduction.
Awesome. I'm going to just start off by asking a few little questions, and our format is pretty simple. We really want to, as we talk about an Unbox to Lead, we try to use leaders to support one another and to share their experiences. So I want to go as far back as possible, and I want to just talk about, I was going to go back to your family, but before that, tell us a little bit about what you do, your organization. When I met you, you were in the banking industry. Then I know that you transitioned and were the owner broker with a major national insurance company. But then I understand there's been another transition since then. So what's going on?
So yeah, appreciate that. I was with a national firm from a banking perspective, well-known bank across the nation. And at that particular time in that marketplace, there was some major change happening in the marketplace at that time. There was a lot of turmoil on the financial markets. There was things going on where companies were going through a significant financial crisis. There were companies that were being acquired. There were companies that were going out of business. The company I worked for was too big to, quote unquote, too big to fail. So they were kind of tasked by the government to even absorb some companies that were about to go bankrupt. So there's a lot of change going on in the marketplace at that particular time. You know, one of the things I learned in corporate America was kind of to learn how to read the tea leaves, right? Yeah. So one of the major projects I worked on was a project where we were digitizing things from a technology perspective. So what we did was we did a thing where we digitized the ATMs. So you could actually go to an ATM machine, and rather than going to a teller, you can make a deposit at the ATM machine through a digital transaction. So in other words, it would take a picture of your check, process that check, and then you don't have to go to the bank. So we call that the redhead teller. So what that teller, that automated teller was able to do was able to replace six people in a banking center, one teller.
Wow.
Right? So as I worked on that project, I saw where they were going with the bank. They had to find ways to make more profits, make more money. But that means less people, right? So as you start looking at that, you start saying, okay, what is the long-term here in the bank, right? Technology's going to be constantly looking at ways to reduce staff, do things from a technology perspective. So technology was very powerful. So I could continue to go through the cycle of always, you know, climbing the corporate ladder, always trying to do this, try to maintain the position, or I can reach back into my background. I come from a background where people were individual business owners. My dad had his own medical practice. My mother had her own dance school. So at that point, I made a decision. I said, do I want to continue to do corporate, or do I want to do something on my own where I can wake up and shave the boss, right? So one of the things the Lord provided for me was an opportunity, because the Captain Courier I went to, you couldn't buy a franchise. You couldn't do that. You had to be interviewed. And someone requested to interview me. It was out of the blue. I was like, wow, okay. I had to get my name. He said, well, I heard some things you were doing, and we wanted to talk to you. I said, okay, great, I'll talk to you. So I interviewed with 300 people for this one position, and I got it.
Wow.
So that's when I took over the agency that I took over. And so that gave me an opportunity to put my own shingle out there, right? So I went from being a rookie in corporate to running a multi-million dollar agency, right? So at that point, I started doing that, and that was very exciting. But once again, I always have my eye on what's going on, right? So the first 2 or 3 years, things were great. It was a great experience. But then things started to happen in the marketplace. Technology started to impact the insurance business just as it impacted banking, right? So what I saw was, I saw some disruption in the marketplace. I saw some people out there doing some things that I couldn't do. I was working in what we call a captive carrier, where one size tries to meet everybody's need, and that wasn't working. For every two people I would sell something to, I would lose one to one of these guys that was doing the disruption out here. One of the guys that had access to 20 or 30 carriers and say, well, if that price doesn't meet you, I can meet you at this price. Right? And so I had to make a decision. Am I going to stay in a captive carrier where I'm, you know, kind of operating with one arm behind my back, or am I going to go someplace where I can operate with two hands? So I made a decision at that point. It was a challenging decision because my wife is like, hey, you're doing great here. You're doing good. Why do you want to leave this and go do this? And I had to explain and say, this is why I want to do this, right?
Was that the second time you had that conversation with her when you left the bank?
Yeah, exactly. Within 5 year period, right?
Yeah.
Right. And so she's like, okay, what are you doing? And I was like, so that was a tough part, right? And it was a little rocky there for a couple of months as I made that transition. But the Lord just encouraged me to push forward, right? So in the captive carrier, I was limited to a 30-mile demographic because there's other agents in this captive carrier.
Gotcha.
But as I went broker, I could now operate freely across North Carolina. I expanded to South Carolina. I've expanded to Virginia. So now I'm doing business in 3 states. I'm about to expand even more, right? So my business is growing, and the Lord is blessing because we stepped out on faith to move forward with it. And it wasn't easy. Trust me. Those first 6 months.
And that's what I want to dig into because, you know, it sounds as if you made a gamble on yourself. And I was offered an opportunity some time ago, and I said, you know what? I'm not ready to go back and work for someone else again. I stepped out of, denominational employment to take a gamble on myself. And while I have the worst boss in the world, I really do enjoy working for him because one thing I know is he's never going to fire me. So I want to talk about how did you go through the emotional process? And I know this is kind of a weird question, but how does one go through an emotional process to leave corporate America with all of the benefits and perks? And you weren't out there cleaning the parking lot. You know, you were in the C-suite. So how does one leave that type of industry, move and then go to another one? What is the emotional, the mental process that you use to do that?
Well, for me, it was really, going back to some of my experiences, right?
Yeah.
Going back to some of my experiences in my family, right? So I kind of mentioned that my mother was, had her own dance studio, her own business, right? And so my dad was had his own medical practice, right? So I saw them both operating in their own spheres, in their own business, right? And so they were both successful in what they were doing. So my first job actually, my first job was working for my mother in accounting, as the accountant for a dance school, right? Oh. I was about maybe 12 years old, but she knew I had an aptitude for numbers. She could tell I could calculate things pretty fast in my head. She says, well, why don't you be my accountant for my dance school, right? So I did her books for her, right? Oh, wow. And so in doing her books for her, I had an aptitude for it. But I also thought, I wanted to look at science. So I was, exploring both sides of the thing. Do I want to do science and do what my dad's doing? Or I want to do business, right? So I was looking at both paths. But my parents then did something that was kind of different. They had me take an aptitude test, right? And the aptitude test had me in business very strong. So at that point, I made a decision when I was going to college not to go the medical path, but go the business path. So it kind of was a fork in the road, right?
Yeah.
To do that. But that experience working for my mother's business always stuck with me, right? And so, you know, from my family history, I can trace my roots back to the end of slavery.
Wow.
Right? So we can trace my family name. My family name's unique, Sweat. You don't know that many people named Sweat.
Yeah.
So it's an easier name to trace, right? But my father was able to go back and get some things and information that kind of helped us on that path to rediscover some things, because he understood and kept his own history of his name, right? Because he wants to know about his father and his father, right? So we were able to trace our ancestor, Richard Sweat, back to slavery. He worked his way to freedom as a blacksmith working for the owner of the plantation, which was the Sweat Plantation in Tennessee.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the war, Civil War, Sweats moved from Tennessee to Texas. So my family made a transition from Tennessee to Texas, down to Gallison, Texas. So that's where I can trace my roots back to slavery in Tennessee. And so at that point, my family was always, they knew they came from folks. My ancestor, Richard Sweat, worked his way out of slavery from being a blacksmith. And so it encouraged all of us to have that motivation. And so I know that I come from people, and I know that my people have done things, right? And so all my ancestors have had different levels of different success in doing things. And so that's what I'm continuing with my family history.
One of the things that we do at Unbox Lead, this is phenomenal. One thing we do at Unbox the Lead is we do help leaders to process and to understand the various functionings throughout the generations. And we talk about how we are pre-programmed, even before we're born, how we're pre-programmed. And science is catching up with it, understanding how a lot of these things are encoded into our DNA. And we're learning about epigenetics, not just from a traumatic perspective, but we're learning about epigenetics also, how it can bring about resiliency as well. And that's what I'm hearing in your story. I've never had the opportunity to meet your father, but I've heard you always speak of him in such high terms. And I've always had an admiration for him. Talk a little bit about your father and the influence that he's had on you as a leader, on you as a husband and as a father.
Well, I know it's interesting you say that, because I think my dad and my mom had equal influence upon me, right? Yeah. So earlier you mentioned that my four daughters, I would say that my wife has had just as much influence, maybe even more than me in some aspects on raising my daughters, right? Yeah. So, but my mother and my father had a unique balance, right? They were both independent thinkers. They were both independent and could do things. So I learned things from my dad about resilience. I learned things from my dad about persistence. And my dad always had this thought process, like, you know, always told us, your brain is just as good as anybody else's brain.
I like that.
Right. So, you know, it doesn't matter what color you are, doesn't matter where you came up from, doesn't matter who did this, use your brain.
Yeah.
Right. And so my mother's mantra was always keep on keeping on. So you may have some things where you slip and fall, but you get back up, you keep on going.
Yeah.
So that's our family motto, is to keep on keeping on, right? So my mother showed me, you know, how to interact with people, right? Because she had a dance school and she had different students and she had to interact with all kinds of people, right?
Yeah.
But my mother was very good at that, right? But she got that from her father, my grandfather. I learned that from my grandfather too. He was an incredible man, actually. My grandfather was. He was well loved in Dallas. One of the things my grandfather did, just a side note, at the end of World War II, they were looking for opportunities for affordable housing for people of color. And so they were looking for someone to kind of lead that initiative in Dallas. They chose my grandfather. So my grandfather developed in part of Dallas affordable housing for people of color. And he did such a great job of that. He was known throughout the community. My grandfather could go anywhere in the community and people would give him anything he wanted. If he needed, you know, he even had to ask something. He didn't say, we'll take care of you because you took care of us, right? Yeah. It was incredible. I'd be walking down the street. You Sam Weston's son? Yes. They, he's okay. I'll mess with him. It's that kind of thing. It was crazy. Yeah. It was crazy. Like, they loved my grandfather. So just the same point of that my grandmother was awesome in music. And she was, you know, a musical teacher. But, you know, at that point in time, you can only do so much in education. But my grandmother didn't let that hold her back. She actually wrote a symphony for the Dallas Symphony Orchestra.
Wow.
Right? And so so that's the kind of things that, those are the kind of examples I have from the standpoint of when I was growing up, and things that we could do, things like that. And those are the kind of things that we share with our daughters, to let them know you come from people. You can do different things, and you don't have a limit. You can be unlimited in what you do, right? And so that can be very, you know, that those kind of things can be very powerful to share and to instill and to show that you can do those different things. So I think that's also encouraged me not to be afraid to try something different and to do something different, but also at the same time, you know, strive to do it so that it becomes successful. Right.
Before Raphael jumps in there, there's so much, man. I mean, there's so much that I want to unpack, and we have a limited time on today's show, but there's so much I want to unpack. But one of the things that's really jumping out at me, and I just feel impressed to just share this, the importance. I always say that the most important decision that you make for your child before it's even born is who the other parent will be. So if you're a man, the most important decision you make for your child is who the mother is going to be. And if you're a woman, who the father is going to be. It's just so important that that we think in those terms, because as we talk about wealth and generational prosperity, which doesn't always tie to money, but generational prosperity, it really boils down to the family structure. And it boils down to making sure that children who come in this world have the top advantages, which starts with the mother and father. And I say that because, you know, when I was really impressed with your leadership as a father, you said, hey, yes, but the real leader, the real one that ought to get the kudos is my wife, because of how she has, you know, really nurtured and worked with our daughters. And I thought about that, and it just really brought that home to me, just how important it is to understand our families, to make sure that when we start our families, that we're very intentional and conscientious about choosing someone who shares our values and that's going to help to set the best environment for the children that we bring into this world. I didn't mean to get off on that soapbox. I'm going to turn it over to Raphael.
I would agree with that 100%. I would even say that one of the things that, you know, my mother told me was, was to find a helpmate.
Mm.
She said, find a helpmate. And my dad told me, all the glitters is not gold. He said, all the glitters is not gold. He told me, ugly gold to the bone. And so, I always remember that, right? But it stuck with me to find a helpmate, right?
Yeah.
And so, I agree with you 100%. That was a key thing, to find a helpmate. And he even tells you in the Bible that Adam had a helpmate, right?
That's it.
So that's something. The other thing I would tell you is that another key thing that I think was important for me was that, there was always something, you know, tugging at me from a standpoint, not only from the, you know, trying to do things and, you know, to be successful, stuff like that, but there are always things tugging at me from spiritual perspective, right?
Yes.
And I remember at certain points in my life where there were certain times where something told me to look at things differently. And that was, to me, I could see it clearly now, that was the Holy Spirit tugging at me, right? Yes. So I grew up in a family where it was Southern Baptist, right? Straight Southern Baptist, right? Mark or Southern Baptist, right? Every Sunday, you know, Easter and stuff like that, you know, that was part of the family structure. My parents instilled us to be independent thinkers, right? So one of the things that they also wanted us to do was to know who we were. And so when I say know who we were was, we could have gone to a private school, but my parents insisted we go to a public school. So that we would know who we were. They saw some of their friends send their kids to private schools, and those kids were lost, right? They didn't know if they were Black, they didn't know they were trying to be white, they didn't know all that, right? So my parents made a decision we would go to public school. They also made a decision that they would supplement our education as needed, knowing that sometimes at public school, you don't get to certain things you need to do. Yeah. So they were supplemented with tutors. The tutors, and this is where I think God intervened again. The tutors were Seventh-day Adventist.
Okay.
So when we studied with them, they wouldn't meet with us on Saturdays. They would meet with us on Sundays. So after church, we would go over to their house and get tutored. Pretty crazy. But wow. That's what we did, right? So while they were tutoring us, they were dropping nuggets on us. At the same token, spiritual nuggets on us, right? And those nuggets had a chance to germinate. So there was four of us. The nuggets germinated with my brother and I, not so much with my sisters.
Yeah.
Don't know, but they had the same opportunity as we did. So when I was away at college and I came home for the summer, the tutors, his name was Elder Henderson, he invited me to a Revelation seminar. I said, what's this? He said, well, you come and see me, talk about some stuff before, but come and hear this. And when I did, I had a more fulfilled spiritual awakening, right?
Yes.
At that point, I made a decision spiritually not to do Southern Baptist, but to go with the body of worldwide believers, yes. Right? And so, and that was a significant decision for me, right? Because that gave me more of a spiritual compass to guide me on certain things, right?
Yes.
So on certain things I could have done in corporate that I didn't do. Certain things I could have done in other areas that I didn't do, right? But some folks were going over to, you know, places of entertainment, let's just say, I would bypass, right? Mm. But some people were up all night drinking, I wouldn't be doing that, yeah. Right? Right? And so there were some times where I paid some penalties for that too, but that's okay, because I knew where I knew where my path was going, and I knew where, you know, where I wanted to be spiritually, and where, you know, spiritually my home was going to be. So the having that guide is has been constant, right? So there's going to be times in the world where you're going to certain things you say, well, I'm just not going to do, and there's going to be certain things where you maybe feel like sometimes it's not happening because of that. But that's still okay. But I made that decision. So that was a key point in my journey at that point.
Let me pry into that just a little bit more, because both with family as well as with workplace, one of the challenges when you are a principle-centered leader is remaining connected with people who don't share your values or your worldview, remaining connected with them, but at the same time, having your own independence. How did that look both in the corporate world, but even before the corporate world, how did that look with your family? Because, you know, having pastored in the South my whole adult life, Baptist born, Baptist bred, and when I die, I'll be Baptist dead, you know? So I understand that whole concept. So how does one stay in touch with their family, connected, while at the same time living out their values and their principles, and the same in the workplace? How did you navigate that?
Yeah, so I think with family, the key is doing things in love, right? Right? So doing things in love means that when you go home for Christmas, I no longer ate the Christmas ham.
Okay.
Right? I no longer, you know, was drinking like a fish, right? So, you know, so it was like I made a decision to kind of stop that, right? And I told him, well, I don't eat that anymore, or I don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
They said, well, why? I said, well, this is why, because, you know, it's not healthy. It's not healthy, right? It's not, you know, it's not good for you. Why would you want to eat something that's full of all this stuff and you know it's not good for you, right? And I just stopped there and said, well, you know, if you want to continue to eat, they can still eat that. And I'm not going to judge them on that. I just told them what I wasn't going to do, and I told them why, right? Wow. And I can understand why, and I can explain why, right? Yeah. And so I think from a family perspective, that was one thing. From a corporate perspective, you know, I don't, you know, it was a case where probably the most challenging thing was, you know, how many days are you going to work, right? You going to come into the office on Saturday? No, I'm not coming to the office on Saturday. Right? And so, you know, do things in love, but also set the expectation up front. I think if you set the expectation up front, and they understand that, they'll respect it. I never forget, I was interviewing with this one job, and it was going to be in a different place, and I was working with GE at the time. And I was interviewing the folks and said, well, you know, we do this and work, work. I said, well, I could do all those things. I could even come in on Sundays, but I would not be working on Saturday. I was just straight up about it.
Yeah.
Right? And they said, okay. I said, okay.
Okay, okay. I like that.
Right? Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those things where you just, I think if you do it in love, if you do it and you're transparent about it, I think that makes a difference.
Principle-centered leadership. And I love the way you said, I continue to go home. So the connected part is I'm not going to, because my family doesn't think and operate like me, I'm not going to stop interacting with them. I'm not going to act different in the workplace. I'm going to continue to be a part of the team, continue to do my part to lift. But at the same token, I'm going to share my values and principles. That's one thing we've been talking about a lot here, is the importance of sharing on the front end. This is what I think. This is what I believe. This is what I will do. This is what I will not do. And that really does, a lot of people don't even know this or appreciate this. That actually lowers the level of anxiety in the organization when there is someone who operates by a set of predictable principles. Because now we know exactly what we're going to get from James Sweat. We don't have to know, you know, is he going to fudge the books and lie this time and then, you know, talk about his moralities the next time? Is he going to do this? You know, is he going to be trying to hit on the new intern this week, but then talk about he needs these days off for church reasons? You know, we know that this is going to be a consistent person throughout our interaction with him. And that actually has a way of lowering. Rafael, I know I could talk all day. I'm gonna let you, I know you have some questions. I'm gonna let you jump on in here. Go ahead.
I think this would probably be a good time to end part one of our show. And yeah. Then we'll come back on part two and I'll get into some of my questions. I think it would be kind of a hard break to transition. We got a lot of good stuff, and I think, man, you know, when it's good, I think you leave them wanting more, right?
Leave them one more.
All right. So that brings us to the end of part one of our interview with James Sweat. We look forward to part two, which will air the following week. Thank you once again, Dr. Davis, for your insight and expertise, and to our special guest, James Sweat. The Unboxed broadcast is produced by Bobby Davis Jr., graphics and video design provided by Damon Mace, and marketing and promotion by John Sedano. Remember to visit our website at www.unboxthelead.com. For Dr. Robert Davis, I'm R.P. Soriano, and we look forward to seeing you at the next broadcast of Unbox as we help you unbox the power and potential of your leadership. Be well.
Unbox provides a full-service leaders peer support community that helps high-level leaders become more authentic leaders who build healthy workplace cultures and reach their personal life goals. To learn more and discover how we can take your leadership and your life to the next level, please visit our website at unboxtolead.com. That's unboxed, the number two, lead.com. Again, that's unboxed, the number two, to lead.com.